Dmitri Shostakovich's Piano Sonata No. 2, written in 1942, recorded in 1965 by the great Russian pianist whom we're featuring on Collector's Corner, Maria Yudina. That concludes this edition of Collector's Corner, but we have three more programs remaining in this series featuring Maria Yudina. Next week, Beethoven's Opus 111 Sonata, Bach's Chromatic Fantasy and Fugue, music by Mozart, Brahms, and Béla Bartók as well, as we continue our survey of the art of Maria Yudina. This is Henry Fogel. I hope that you've enjoyed the program, and I hope that perhaps I'm introducing you to an artist you didn't know. Collector's Corner is distributed by the WFMT Radio Network.
Walk in with grace, I know your face, and I trust your hands. Find your teachers in the voice of the forest. Some plug you can't ignore this wisdom of the voiceless. Remedies are bound to fall and surround us from the garden to the farthest. Prayer made of stardust. Find your healing in the music that calls you, the voice that enthralls you. What do you belong to? Eyes up. The setting of the sun, give thanks to each and everyone. The lesson is the medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face, and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face, and I trust your hands.
And Holistic Health Perspectives, support for that show comes from our members and local artist, Chat Co. His new show, A Tradition Not Evolving Becomes an Empty Shell, is on display at the Corner Gallery and Enoteca Wine Bar in Ukiah and Greenwood Ridge Tasting Room in Anderson Valley. Chat Co.'s works are rooted in the tradition of the new. The show continues indefinitely. And support for Holistic Health Perspectives also comes from our members and Corners of the Mouth in Mendocino. For over 40 years, Corners of the Mouth Natural Food Store continues to provide local organic produce, bulk herbs and foods, personal care products, and more. Corners also carries nutritional supplements with well-trained consultants. Wellness consultants providing assistance. Open daily 8 to 8 in the Red Church on Ukiah Street in Mendocino Village. Information at cornersofthemouth.com or on Facebook.
And welcome to Holistic Health Perspectives with your hosts Mary Pat Palmer and Karen Uphoff. This show shares information on complementary medicine from different experts and disciplines to empower our listeners to make informed decisions about their own health care. The information presented is not necessarily that of the station. For show postings and website information about our guests, check out our Facebook page, Holistic Health Perspectives. This and other shows are also on Jukebox for about a month. The link is on the KZYX website. We are archiving again and will add past and present shows to our KZYX page.
And we are so fortunate today to have back. She has been on the show a while ago, I believe, but have with us Jolie Elan, and she is the founder and director of Go Wild Institute that weaves science, myth, and spirit to awaken our nature to find balance and wonder within the great web of life. Go Wild Institute offers educational programs that blend modern science with the ancient awareness that the Earth is alive, sentient, and sacred. Jolie is a deep ecologist, ethnobotanist, educator, and a consulting field biologist. Jolie has studied herbalism for 25 years and has worked on ethnobotanical projects on four continents, including restoring sacred forest groves in India and developing the herbal medicine sector in war-torn Kosovo. She is also a certified spiritual director, offering spiritual mentoring for those who wish to increase their intimacy with the divine through the natural world. Jolie received her BA from the Evergreen State College in Environmental Studies and her MS in Natural Resources Forestry from Humboldt State University, where she studied the sustainable harvest of medicinal plants as well as botanical taxonomy. She received her spiritual direction certification at the Chaplaincy Institute. You can learn more about her at www.gowildinstitute.org. And so I'd like to welcome Jolie onto the show. Hey, Jolie.
Hi there.
Welcome to Holistic Health Perspectives.
Thank you.
And you can...
I'm happy to be here.
All right.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
We are happy to have you, believe me.
Yeah, and this is a subject dear to my heart, so thank you for wanting to talk about it. We like to start with...
Fascinated by it.
Yeah, and you can speak up a little bit, just to make sure you're...
Okay.
I get the full volume.
Good?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
And, what made you want to study ethnobotany of herbs and later plant intelligence? And I think that's one question we have, and maybe to clarify what exactly an ethnobotanist is for those who may not be sure.
Sure. Ethnobotany is the study of plants and the human relationships to them. So often ethnobotanists spend time with indigenous cultures and document local customs and uses of plants for medicine and food. But I'm sort of a different type of ethnobotanist. I'm more interested in what are our relationships within our American culture? What are our relationships with plants within our culture, and how do we deepen those relationships?
Mm-hmm.
How do we relate to the plants around us, right? Like, mm-hmm. what nurtures and heals us? Like, and what are our beliefs about the plant world around us? How do these beliefs shape how we act on the planet and treat our plant life that makes up, I think, 97% of the biomass on Earth? So that's mm-hmm. sort of actually what made me want to learn more about plant intelligence, because it's in so many cultures around the world, especially indigenous cultures, people grow up with a belief that plants are sentient and conscious and that you can have relationships with them. And when you have cultures like that, you know, the resulting deep relationships with the earth are going to be much more meaningful or much more connected. Mm-hmm. And in our culture, you know, what are we taught? That plants are dumb, people are vegetables if they're brain dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so I guess for me, the idea is, like, how do we tap into that intelligence and how do we teach a different way of thinking about our plant world?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what has brought me to really be interested in plant intelligence. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a good start.
It's very important. Yes. Yeah, so it's really like shifting a whole paradigm in thinking that, you know, you're sounding like you're going after here.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and in other cultures, I mean, people are brought up thinking, oh, they hear from their elders as children, oh, the plant told me this,
mm-hmm.
or I dreamt of this plant, or, you know, in some cultures, you're not allowed to use a plant unless you've dreamt about it or had a vision about it. And so in those cultures, of course, they're so much more connected to everything within the web of life, all the things that eat the plants, all of the things that are connected to the plants, and just the medicines and the foods themselves, because it's like they're relating with other creatures that are sentient. Which,
brothers,
I mean, imagine if we walk through the world thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. Sisters and brothers.
Like, yeah, the kin.
Yeah.
Kin.
The kin.
I am. Don't you think? I mean, I know you've worked with kids. Don't you feel that that is sort of natural for children? I know when we were kids, we talked to plants and animals as if they were, you know, as if they could talk. I mean, they did talk to us on some level. So, do you find that with children that is there for many children, or what has been your experience?
I think that I don't get to them young enough, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, when I work with kids, they're usually like third and fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I think that they already don't. They've already passed through that point a lot. I mean, they still, you can encourage them and talk to them and kind of re-spark that. But I do think that, like, that kids innately have it, but it's lost so quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's your experience with that?
Well,
that's true. When I've taught 10-year-olds, it probably is a little, 10 and 12-year-olds are different, but I also taught 5-year-olds, and they definitely have more of that, you know, feeling of that the world is animated on many levels.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe for, yeah, little toddlers, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Right? I mean, because because it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, because that's the truth, and I think kids are born knowing that. And
one of the things that totally fascinates me, we're off the air?
We just got knocked off.
Oh, okay. We got knocked off, so hold on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one of the things that always amazes me is that in our vegetable gardens, children don't eat you don't have to tell kids not to eat the potato plant or the tomato plant. They know that. And that's always been something that kind of astounds me. I trust it for sure. They might eat pokeberries because pokeberries are like gorgeous, but they really do avoid the Solanacea, you know, that could be toxic to them. What do you think?
That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I've ever noticed that particularly. It's a good adaptive behavior,
berry.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and those plants smell really bad.
I was going to say, the smell of those plants is loud.
Yep.
So, when it comes to, though, actual plant intelligence, and I know I have done some things with Pam Montgomery, for instance, and I'm just wondering, you talk about the study of plant neurobiology. What is that study? Is there an actual field of plant neurobiology?
There is, and it's super exciting right now. It's called the study of plant intelligence, or if you want to be like geeky about it, it's plant neurobiology.
Okay,
great. And basically, there are real researchers in real universities who are looking at the idea. They're trying to understand how plants process information and how they process the information they get from their environment and how plants use this information to adapt to their environment. So the cool thing, I think, about it is that a lot of the research that's coming out of these big institutions is kind of dovetailing with the indigenous wisdom that has been, you know, around for millennia, which is really cool about our crazy day and age, is that we have these two streams of consciousness, these two ways of thinking that are coming together. And, you know, the field of plant intelligence is really changing the way that we think about plants. And so I wanted to highlight some headlines about plant intelligence. So Scientific American had an article that said, "Do plants think?" Mm-hmm. And then the BBC said, "Plants can think and remember." And then here's another title, "The Root Brain Hypothesis of Charles Darwin Revival After More Than 125 Years."
Wow.
Published in Plant Signaling and Behavior. And then PRI put out something saying, "New research on plant intelligence may forever change how you think about plants." And in Nature, "Plant Intelligence, Mindless Mastery." So, I mean, it goes on. I mean, you just have to do an internet search, and there is a lot of books out there. There's some really good books. There's one called What Do Plants Know? and then another one is Brilliant Green. And yeah, I mean, at Bioneers, there's a whole bunch of people talking about plant intelligence now. So it's sort of a big field, and it is really changing what we think about our green allies, our green relations.
And you can also kind of think back to the early work of Stephen Buhner and others who were from the get-go saying this and saying there's Gaia. You know, there's a unifying force in nature that to which we are connected. We don't always know it, but we are part of that. We are part of this, what you've called the web, this enormous web that we live in.
Yeah, I love that. And I certainly feel like the plants over the last 10 years have been instructive in that for me. They have showed me how I'm connected. They want us to be connected. Mm-hmm. They're calling out for us. They are dying for us to pay attention to what they're saying, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I agree. But they're also threatened. Yeah. I mean, they're also, they've probably never been more threatened than during our time. So it kind of makes sense that the communication that they have that's self-protective would then begin to reach some of the people who were more connected, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I definitely feel like plants are calling out to me. I just lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
But as far as plants being our allies and wanting to help us, there's this story that I wanted to share with you that was a story that from Rolling Thunder, who's a Cherokee medicine man, and it came to me through my teacher, Bobby Lake Tom, who is Karuk, as well as other tribes. And he calls the story the origin of human health and sickness, and origin of, human healing and sickness. And the story is that a long time ago, humans were mistreating the earth, and they weren't respecting the earth. They weren't saying prayers for when they killed things. They were just not taking into consideration the other relations on the earth. And so the animals all got together, and they all decided, we need to have a council. What are we going to do about these humans? And so they held their separate councils, like the bears held a council, and they said, okay, we're going to make bows and arrows just like humans. And then they made the bow and arrow. One of them sacrificed themselves and took his entrails out so they could make the bow part. And they were like, all right, our bow's ready. What do we do? And they were trying to use it, but they realized they would have to get rid of their claws. They'd have to sacrifice their claws to do this, and they didn't want to do that. So, and then the snakes held council, and they decided, well, we're just going to send bad curses to humans. And they sent bad dreams and sort of mental illness. And the deers got together, and they decided that they were going to send rheumatism to any hunters that didn't say the right prayers. And so then went like this through all of the different clans of animals, and there were all of these curses and illnesses that got sent to humans. And then the plant people met, and they said, what are we going to do? And they met and met for a really long time, and they decided that they were going to be the allies for humans, and that for every disease that was ever given to humans, that there would be a remedy in nature in the plant world for the humans.
I love that.
My grandfather, who was half Cherokee, told me a similar story, but the addition that he told me was the plant said, we will do this for now. If it doesn't work, you guys have got them.
little twist in the plot
little
there.
Twist in the plot.
You guys have got them. You meaning the diseases?
Yeah. That the plants would try to connect. The plants would try to work with humans as best they could, but if it didn't work, they would draw back.
Oh.
Dang.
Well, of course, if we don't reach for the medicine,
right,
and we don't take it anyway, that would be the outcome.
Yeah.
I love that the plants took a really long time to come to this decision, because that's one of the things I think plants give us is a different sense of timing. And mm-hmm. I think that's a real gift of plants.
I think that's part of the reason that we think that they're not intelligent.
Right.
Because they move so slow.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, Jolie, because people might be listening, and this is Holistic Health Perspectives and KZYX, and we have as our guest Jolie Elan. I hope I'm saying that right.
Jolie Elan.
Elan, sorry. Jolie Elan. And she is talking about plant intelligence. And one thing you mentioned was you're saying the plants have been calling you a lot lately. Can you give an example of what it means for a plant to really come after you, let's say, for those who may not understand that?
Sure. I'll find a really good example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about oaks.
Okay, great.
So oak trees, one of my favorite plants. Oak trees have been revered by people all around the world for millennia. People have eaten acorns way before agriculture all around the world. When you think, oh, maybe it's just the native Americans who ate acorns, but the reality is oaks grow in a band around the northern hemisphere down into Mexico. They grow throughout Europe. They grow in China and Korea. And people all over the world ate acorns and loved the oak and had ceremonies for the oak. Like if you think about druids, right, the druids, druid means to know the oak. That's what the word means, and that they worship the oak. But probably because they were eating the acorns. The acorns are very rich and nutritious. And about 10, 12 years ago, I set out to learn how to make acorn food. I thought, oh, this is cool. Like many people have eaten acorn food, so mm-hmm. let me try. So in the process of learning how to make acorn food, I just got completely taken over by the oak trees. They started, I just got obsessed, and I started learning everything about them, about their ecology, about their importance as keystone species, and then I started having dreams about them. And I've had dreams about, I had a dream where I went down inside a portal of an oak tree, and I watched the energy build and build and build, and all of a sudden it flashed like I was there when the lightning was building, and I woke up and I was like, that's strange, like, wow, what do oaks, are oaks connected to lightning? Am I actually tapping into the spirit of the tree? Like, what's going on? And so I started doing research about lightning and oaks, and it turns out that there's lots of associations of oaks and lightnings and lightning, and like Zeus is considered an oak god who's mm-hmm. connected with lightning and thunder. Mm-hmm. Thor as well, right? So these plants mm-hmm. are like, they're coming to me. Then I had a healing dream with an oak where I was sick, and in my dream I went to the oak, and the oak basically was like, do you see how tall I am? And it was like 300 feet tall. It was the biggest oak tree on the planet. And I was like, yeah. And he said, my roots go down that deep. Do you see how wide my canopy is? I said, yes. And my roots go out that wide. So if you ever need to, you ever need me, I'm here. You can just come to me, and I will be there for you. And I woke up healed.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, spiritually, I was healed. Like, I was like, all right, I have the ground that I needed. I was going through a divorce. I was having a hard time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they started coming to me in my dreams. And then I was like I took this hike up Mount Tam. I was doing a meditation for a few days up there. And as I was walking up, this tree just called out to me. I mean, you guys talk to plants, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of your listeners talk to plants, but this plant screamed at me.
Mm-hmm.
It like was like, hey, you. And I was like, wow, I've never had a tree try so hard to get my attention. And I said, yes, can I help you? And the tree said, when you get a chance, will you sit with us? Now, this is a tan oak tree, and the tan oaks on Mount Tam are dying. They're really, sudden oak death is hitting them very, very hard. And people say that they're not going to be around very much anymore. And especially in Marin County.
Mm.
So So I was up there for a few days. I was meditating a lot. I was in a really good space. I decided, okay, I'm going to sit down with this tree and see what happens. And so what the tree told me, I kind of went into a trance. It was bizarre. And I'm like weeping and weeping, and the trees are like, we are dying. Our wisdom is leaving the planet. No one loves us anymore. Our people loved us and cared for us and celebrated us, and no one does that anymore, and we're dying. So, you know, it's tragic. It's horrible. Mm-hmm. The Tanoaks were incredibly important to the Native people. The Tanoaks were the best-tasting acorn, like, hands down. Like, as an acorn eater, like, I will tell you, I can taste the difference. Like, Tanoak acorns are the best-tasting. They taste like butter cookies. They're amazing. And so these trees were... You know, we were loved and we were honored, and no one loves us or honors us anymore, and we're dying. And I said, well, that's super sad. Like, what can I do to help you? What can I do? And they said, you can do acorn ceremonies on Mount Tam. Mm-hmm. And I said, but I'm Jewish and I'm from New York. And they said, yeah, we're not happy about that either, but you're the best we have. So anyway, I've been doing ceremonies out on Mount Tam for 5 years now. Oh, and nice. What's really cool is that there's a woman who, I just moved to Ashland, Oregon, and there's a woman in Ashland, Oregon, or right outside at Selma, and she holds an acorn festival. And I talked to her in the year, told her this story. I said, this is a story. The Tanoaks told me to do a ceremony for them. And she goes, why do you think I'm doing an acorn festival? I don't know what an acorn festival is, but the trees asked me to do it, so I'm doing it.
I love that.
That is wonderful.
That's great.
Truly. Truly wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, the oaks, there's a book, Oak, the Foundation of Civilization, or something like that. I forget the author's name, but it
Logan,
helps.
Logan, I think is his last name.
Pardon?
Logan, I think is his last name.
Yeah, right. And it is it's just a beautiful book, and it does give you a sense of this is our civilization. The oak is our civilization. It has built our civilization, literally. So it's quite, and especially as people in the middle of redwoods, you know, I think we tend to think less about how important the oak is, but the people inland further certainly think a lot about it.
Mm-hmm. That's probably
true. And the oaks are incredibly, like, abundant. Like, one large oak tree can give 1,000 pounds of acorns. And if you think about it, it doesn't really need much to reproduce itself. Mm-hmm. It's feeding. I mean, oaks are very generous.
Yes.
They
mm-hmm.
feed everybody. And if you take the oaks out of the system, everything else goes downhill, including the soil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of animals absolutely depend on that as well. So I'm wondering, because just to go back to sort of the findings with plant consciousness or intelligence, since plants don't have a traditional, I mean, like us, an animal type of nervous system, are they finding it's mostly chemical that this intelligence is?
You mean the communication?
That is
the
question. So how do plants function without a brain?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's just talk about the idea of what intelligence is to begin with. We'll get to the answer to your question, but I kind of want to talk about some of the research a little bit. And so what do you, like, if you were going to define intelligence, what would it be?
Me personally, I have a very broad definition of intelligence. I mean, I believe in natural intelligence of all beings, so I don't know what to say. It's a consciousness, I suppose, that is able to navigate the world and problem solve and respond.
And mine would be a bit more about communication, that they have a very sophisticated network of communication and beings, and that is essential to add to Karen's, that is an essential component of intelligence of the planet that not everybody has, obviously.
Right. Well, so one of the definitions is like one of the main plant researchers in this field talks about intelligence as the ability to sense one's environment, to process and integrate such sensory perceptions, and decide how to behave. Mm-hmm. To know what's going on and make decisions about how to behave. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, we can, maybe we can use that as a working definition right now. And the thing is, you know, there are a lot of reasons why people don't think plants are intelligent. And, you know, we have a lot of biases. We have a lot of human biases. Like, plants, they move very slowly, right? But if you if you slow them down, like, for instance, there's a plant called Cuscuta or Dodder. Do you know that plant? Mm-hmm. It's like that, mm-hmm. that silly string orange
yeah,
plant.
Parasitic Dodder.
Like,
yeah. Yeah,
exactly. So what? It has to reach a host, right? It has to grab onto a host and get sugars because it can't photosynthesize. It's parasitic. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have any green. It can't photosynthesize. So if you were to slow down a plant and have a video time lapse, and what you find is that it has a tendril, and it basically circles its tendril around and around, sniffing the air, looking for chemicals. And then when it finds a host, a good host, it lunges and wraps itself around its victim. Mm-hmm. Like, it behaves like an animal behaves. Mm-hmm. But because we are expecting something to move faster, we have a bias that plants are not intelligent because they're really slow. Mm-hmm. But they're just really, you know, they're very slow. And then the other bias we have is that we're animal-centric, and this is where your question about nervous system and brains kind of come in. We think that, like, humans or animals are the model for intelligence, right? But there's different ways of being smart. Animals concentrate their vital functions into organs. Like, we have brains and nervous systems. If you bit off my head, I would die. If you bit off my arm, it would be gone. I mean, there's some animals that can regrow tails, but they're the exceptions. Plants are designed to lose body parts and keep living. Like, if you mow your grass, you can take 90% of your grass and it'll still grow back. Mm-hmm. Right? They don't concentrate their functions into organs. They have numerous command centers and modular redundancy in their body. So they're like a network structure, like a swarm or a colony. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that they're not intelligent, right? In fact, they're finding, like, plants breathe without lungs. Mm-hmm. They nourish themselves without a mouth. Mm-hmm. They stand erect without skeletons. Mm-hmm. And they also make decisions without brains.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what they're finding, I mean, sort of like to jump ahead to answer your question, is that plants actually, they move electrical and chemical right. signals through their bodies using their vascular system.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's mediated by calcium, which is sort of how our nervous system works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's... Right? It's I love this stuff.
But it's true. I'm sitting here looking out a window that has a plant, a big plant, growing through most of the window, and it's windy. So I'm just watching it, you know, as it dances and moves around, and thinking about that communicability that is so beyond ours. I mean, because they can communicate danger to one another at pretty great distances, certainly the trees can, and, you know, this ability to communicate, you know, we talk about animal communication, which can be, I think for a lot of people, can be visual, but this is a neurological communication that exists between plants and that is sent out with many different emotions and feelings. So that's mm-hmm. incredible.
It's incredible, and, like, they're learning, you know, like, one example of that, which I love, is in South Africa, there's a drought. There's a big drought. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Cape Town basically has no water left.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Water. Right, it's like, right. you know, major city without water. But anyway, so the animals are suffering as well, and there was a situation where all these antelopes were dying, and the researchers are trying to figure out, well, they didn't thirst to death, like, their bellies are full, why are they dying? And then they did these autopsies, and they found that the acacia leaves in their stomach were, the tannin levels of this acacia plant was through the roof. Mm-hmm. And they were discovering that, like, the animal nibbles on the acacia, and the acacia bumps up its tannins remarkably to protect itself, right?
Right.
Well, that's cool just in itself that it has a protective mechanism. But then what they found is that the plant would put out chemicals warning its kin, warning, like, hey, the antelope are coming, bump up your chemicals.
Right.
And so by the time the antelope got there, they were toxic.
Right. Mm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so it not only sensed its environment, but it was able to communicate, as you were saying, Mary Pat, to others and say, hey, let's protect ourselves. There's a threat.
Yeah.
Which
chemicals are so good at doing. I'm just wondering, if somebody asks, where is the seat of plant consciousness, because we're talking about an organless, being, what would your answer be to that?
I think people have been trying to figure that out a long time, and it started with Darwin, and Darwin said that he thought that it was in the root. I had some quotes here that I wanted to read that Darwin said, which I thought were just brilliant.
I immediately go to the vascular system. Well, I immediately go. That's
the seat of intelligence.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, Darwin.
Yeah. So Darwin basically said that it's in the roots. He said it's hardly an exaggeration to say the tip of the radical, which is the root, thus endowed with sensitivity and having the power of directing the movements of the adjoining parts, acts like a brain of one of the lower animals. The brain being seated within the anterior end of the body, receiving impressions from the sense organs and directing several movements. So, Darwin was getting so much flack for his theory of evolution that he decided to let this go because, you can't fight too many fights. But his son continued the studies. And he wrote, Darwin's son wrote a book called The Power of Movement of Plants. And he said that we believe there's no structure in plants more wonderful as far as its functions are concerned, in the tip of the radical. The tip be lightly pressed or burnt or cut, it transmits an influence to the upper adjoining part, causing it to bend away from the affected side. If the tip perceived the air to be moister on one side than the other, likewise, it transmits an influence on the upper adjoining part, which bends towards the source of moisture. Mm-hmm. And when the tip is excited by light, the adjoining part bends from the light or to the light, depends on, what the plant needs.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying that it's in the root. And now, new research by Stefano Mancuso, who's like the main plant intelligence guy, says that each root each root, when I say that, like one small plant will have 15 million root tips.
Right.
Right? That's
right.
A lot of root tips, right? Mm-hmm. So according to this new research, each tip continually detects numerous parameters such as gravity, temperature, humidity, electrical fields, light, pressure, chemical gradients, the presence of toxic substances, sound vibrations, oxygen, carbon dioxide. So the root tip registers this and continually guides the roots, taking into account the plant's needs, right? So each tip's like a processing center.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. They don't work alone, right? They're kind of like a swarm, they're finding. Mm-hmm. That the plants, that the tips are actually working as swarms to each other, and it's like, well, how are they communicating? Some of it's chemical, some of it, but then there are. So when plant tips grow, when the root tips grow, they make clicking noises as the cellulose cell walls break, and so they're, one of the theories is that the plants are sensing that the root tips are working together based on these clicking noises. So there's so much to be discovered. But, where is the brain of the plant? Well, it would probably be somewhere safe where it didn't get eaten.
Right, which would be
which
the
would
roots.
Make sense.
Yeah.
Well, I'm such an airhead that, of course, I go to the vascular and the upper, the aerial parts.
Well, we put our brain out there where it can be eaten. So, it's not, it's understandable. It's interesting. It's almost like I'm thinking Morse code, plant Morse code, little codes going on down there with clicking, or like clicking sticks, or drum.
Right.
But it's also possible that there isn't necessarily a seat of intelligence either, that maybe intelligence is much broader in that, that there isn't necessarily a seat. I mean, who knows? But that's cool.
do talk about our own organism as a holistic system, you know, a holistic where the skin is the largest organ and we have the Wei Qi and Chinese medicine and so on. So that certainly, and now we're discovering the enteric brain in the gut, you know, so it's not over. That's all.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's true. Maybe like the intelligence is in many places, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, some other examples of really smart plants I wanted to talk about is tobacco, right?
Mm.
Tobacco is one of those super smart plants. And, you know, it produces nicotine, which its main job is to kind of deter insects that have nervous system. The nicotine disables their nervous system. Well, some plants are not affected by nicotine. And so what happens is if a tobacco plant is getting eaten by some of these insects that are not affected by nicotine, the plant will then call out to the enemy of its predator. Will say, hey, there's these insects here, why don't you come eat them? And it will call in, like, forces to eat these predators. Isn't that cool?
That is very
cool. So cool.
It makes it a good plant to have near
always
your
in
vegetables.
The always
yeah.
in the garden. Yeah.
I usually have one tobacco in my garden.
There's one I got this year from folks up near you at Strictly Medicinal called Azteca. And this is a truly incredible tobacco. It grew way, way more. You know, I've grown other tobaccos for many years, but this just was enormous and very, very effective in my garden for most predators. It was an amazing, this Azteca was an amazing experience. So.
Mm-hmm. I want to get one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so I'm wondering if it's calling in other predators to eat the bugs, or that brings up the whole cross-communication
right.
with different species.
Yep.
You know.
Right. I mean, they're all connected. They're all, everyone's communicating.
Yes.
The only one who's not are humans.
I know.
Right.
We just have our hands over the ears.
We're a little slow.
Right. And we think we're intelligent, right? That's the irony here, right?
Yeah.
We're culturally deprived, as Chavez used to say.
So tobacco plants also do this other cool thing where they're usually pollinated by moths at dusk.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes like the moths will lay eggs and the caterpillars will eat the tobacco plant and the pollinator then becomes the predator. So tobacco just solves this problem by just switching the time it blooms. Like it can change from blooming to dawn to go for hummingbirds.
Oh, right. So it actually will just switch, and different members of the same species might be doing that differently. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, they're doing
I don't know.
Like to keep the hummingbird, but get rid of the moth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So just switching the time, which is a whole other subject, but just switching the time of blooming is a very simple and eloquent solution.
It's great.
It really is, yeah.
I mean, you know, plants would have to come up with different ways to solve these problems because they're static, meaning, I mean, they're not running off or they're not, you know, grabbing bugs and smashing them. Yeah, so they have to think of more clever ways.
Right. And in fact, plants are really territorial, right? They have to be.
Yeah.
And we don't really think about plants as being territorial.
Right.
But like if you imagine being a little seed trying to take root among like all of the ground that's got all sorts of chemicals in it that are defining territories of other plants, it would be hard.
Right.
And plants invest tremendous resources into their roots, right? It's a big energy output. But here's the thing, if a plant knows that the seed next to it is actually genetically related, it won't put out as much, it won't make as much root mass or put energy into defending itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it knows it's kin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And roots.
There was a wonderful article called Mommy Dearest that talked about different of our favorite herbs, like how mullein the seed goes right underneath the mullein and is sheltered by it. Others will roll away. You know, as we know, they roll away. But that there are definite systems of seed protection for different species of plants. And those are very intricate. They're pretty amazing. You know, an apple rolls away, but there's a reason why it rolls away. It can't grow too close to the mom or dad. And because there isn't room. They are big. You know, so if we look at those in a different way, you know, what are the ones that, say, if they're annuals, those babies want to be right there because they'll take over the space. And if they're perennials, they have different ways, or biennials, they have different ways of creating and ensuring their own future or their baby's future.
Right, they're so smart.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think there, and there's also, there's competition, and people might think, well, that's, you know, that is a view that especially humans have anyway in the natural world, that everything's competing with each other. You know, there's competition for space and resources, but also plants share nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I do know that with roots. Mm-hmm. Have you, you know, read any recent information on that?
Yeah. You mean, are you talking about like mycorrhizal fungi?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or even sharing sugar over to the next,
to the,
you know,
to
tree.
To a challenged plant.
To a challenged plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, there's research about the plants that are, like, in mountain areas where you have deciduous trees that drop their leaves in the winter, and then you have the coniferous plants that just keep their leaves in the winter, and they're connected via underground fungus,
mm-hmm.
and that in the wintertime, the conifers share their sugar with the deciduous trees. And
with the birch.
It's amazing. I mean, and then, you know, that what I learned is that, you know, a lot of plants have these connections with the mycorrhizal fungus, but before that connection is made, there's a large conversation that happens between the plant and the fungus. The plant basically says, "Who are you? What do you want? What do you want with connecting to me?" And they go back and forth and have this chemical discussion of, like, is it safe? Are we going to connect? Are you an enemy? Are you a friend? And that happens, and then they connect, mm-hmm. if they deem it necessary. But it's after mediation and discussion,
uh-huh.
which I cool.
I love that.
No,
yeah,
great.
I mean, the terms had to be negotiated, you know. For those, again, tuning in, this is Holistic Health Perspectives on KZYX with Mary Pat Palmer and Karen Uphoff, and our guest today is Jody Elan, and we aren't taking questions because this is such a thick and dense topic, and we're getting kind of near the end of the show, but Jolie, maybe you can tell us, as far as the role of how plant intelligence would affect our work as herbalists and even as people taking mm-hmm. herbs as medicine, because a lot of people are. So does that change, you know, knowing this, how would that change the way we even interact with our medicine?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good question, right? I mean, If you think about, like, what the chemicals are in the plants that we're using medicinally, I know that medicinal plants are way more than just the chemicals, right?
Right.
But let's just focus on the chemicals right now. Like, for instance, like a plant, if oftentimes when plants are attacked by a bacteria or a virus, they'll emit the chemical methyl salicylate, right, which signals the rest of the plant to be alert, because to start fighting viruses and bacteria, right? But then once, in response to the methyl salicylate, the plants produce salicylic acid, which is basically aspirin, mm-hmm. right? Because they protect themselves from the pains or whatever is coming from the virus or the bacteria, right? And then similarly, like when plants are stressed out, they'll produce something called methyl jasminate, which basically translates as, "I'm not well." And the plants will know, "Oh, you're not well?" Like, they can smell that, like, what's going on? So it's sort of like these chemicals that we use in herbal medicine, they're like a language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, so interesting. Like, can we learn to speak that language? I mean, and I guess, like, if you're a chemist, that would be interesting, too. But also, I feel like we are learning to speak that language just without knowing the chemicals. We're learning to be able to hear the plants. Mm-hmm. And if plants produce chemicals by being stressed out and by responding to stress, can they also produce chemicals for healing when they're treated with love and respect? And that's sort of a fascinating question to me, which I think is along the lines of what you were asking. Like, if we have relationships with our plants and go talk to them, and we realize that the medicine that we're using is about the relationship with that plant, not necessarily the body of it, how does that increase the medicine?
That's a great story. One. Yeah, I mean, your Tannock story, it was not that you were drinking Tannock tea. You were in communication with the Tannock, and the Tannock healed you, which is a, you know, I think has been the next movement in herbology, whether it's plant spirit medicine with Pam or someone else, or however it happens, certainly the interest I see among students has a lot more to do with communication, you know, not that they don't want the scientific background and stuff, but that the communication and the respect and love, you know, are becoming more and more important, and the understanding that we can heal. Well, if we just think about, as herbalists, how things come to us. Like, I've just returned to Susan Weed's, you know, the overnight infusions of nettle and red clover and this and that, you know, and heaven only knows why that happened. I have no idea why that happened. That was just some kind of communication, I believe, between my garden and myself that said, okay, you know, it's winter, get real.
Well, yeah, and I think you're really bringing up the question, when plants are given a certain kind of care and conscious interaction, how much is that changing the medicine they produce into something that's more viable and more fitting to the problems we are having? And
absolutely. Yeah, what is the medicine of the plant? Is it the breakdown of the chemicals, or is it the spirit of the plant? And how do we access that, I guess, essence of the plant for our healing, that, you know, back to that origin of sickness and health story that I was telling, like, what is that plant here on earth to do, you know, and how does it, what's its role? Like, we all have our own roles in the healing of the planet, and, you know, each plant does too.
Right. And what is the interaction between, because there is a change. Jill Stansbury talked about this many years ago, but there's a change when something comes into the body, let's say red clover as a tea, it changes, it is looking for, shall we say, you know, we talk about the catalysts, lobelia or whatever, we talk about the catalytic action of plants as well, and how they, you know, they do have an intelligence even after being living plants. They have an intelligence in terms of how they work with our bodies. And that, again, you know, mushrooms, my God. So, you know, that's a whole other realm of understanding, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and respecting the plants as sentient beings.
Right.
Who have healing to offer us. And I think for me, the reason that the oaks came to me in my dreams and healed me was because I was already doing stuff for them. Like, I was teaching classes on the wisdom of the oak. I go to kids. And so I feel like, you know, as my teacher, Bobby, taught me, like, the three indigenous R's are relationship, reciprocity, and respect.
Mm-hmm.
If we treat our plant allies with those three R's, we will be in a mindset to receive the medicine and the healing gifts. And it's sort of like that relationship that we have with the plant, it sets our mind right to where we can hear.
Sounds like a pretty important principle for interacting with other human beings and animals as well.
All life. So, Jolie, we're getting towards the end of the show. And first of all, I'd love you to give out your contact information, how people can reach you, and also what you have going on at Go Wild Institute right now for those who might be interested.
Thanks for asking. So you can reach me at gowildinstitute.org. Mm-hmm. gowildinstitute.org, and then you can, if you want to email me, you can just contact me through there. And I'd love to hear from you, and send me an email if there's something in this talk that you were interested in or that you want to further address, or if there's, I'm open to hearing from you. And the big thing that Go Wild's got going on right now is we're taking applications for our Wild Woman program that starts in April, which is a 5-month program for women to connect with nature, develop a deep sisterhood, and to learn how to resource from Mother Earth. Like, how do we go to the earth for healing and nurturing and nourishment? And how do we learn to communicate with plants in our dreams? And how do we learn to identify plants? Like, we're going to mix science and spirit and myth, so people will have a well-rounded relationship with the earth. And the reality is like, at this time of great change on this planet, where, like, it feels like we're at the 11th hour and 59 mm-hmm. minutes. I don't know if you guys feel like that. Mm-hmm. This time of great turning, like, I think it's really important for us to awaken our own nature and follow that to where our destiny is calling us in this great turning. So that's sort of the focus of the Wild Woman program. Plus, we have a lot of fun and go on hikes and get to, like, make medicine. And I'd love it if you wanted to join
mm-hmm.
folks out there. Yeah. Feel free to contact me. Also, I'm hosting a few classes with Matt Wood up in Ashland. We're going to do the language of nature.
Nice.
Some shamanic herbalism. He's going to talk about his 7 herbs mm-hmm. from the shamanic perspective of the Torah. So anyway, there's lots of deep ecology classes. And we're going to be doing, Matt and I are going to be doing an online botany class.
Oh, good.
So
I was wondering. Let me just say, Karen and I have both sat in classes with Jolie and her Jepson. Okay,
right.
So... Jolie carries a Jepson that is almost as big as she is, and she knows this book. Jepson is the, well, you describe the Jepson because
it's the Manual of Higher Plants of California.
Yeah.
So it's the botanist's home in California.
Yeah.
And I think what Mary Pat's trying to say is that I am a botanist, and yeah. that I as an herbalist, I think it's really important that we learn the botany. Like, it's important to know the name of a plant if you're
right.
going to have a relationship with it. Like, you wouldn't mm-hmm. think of having a relationship with a human without knowing its name.
Yeah.
So, the botany classes online, I think, will be great, and they'll be accessible for everybody. And
that's a great, that's a wonderful thing to be doing.
It
that's
is.
Called for. Well, Jolie.
Another wonderful thing.
Yeah. It's another wonderful thing. It's really been wonderful to have you on the show, and there's so much to the subject. We could have about 3 shows on it alone, and that would be wonderful.
We probably will.
But we might. Yeah, we might just do part 1, part 2, part 3, you know. Because I know you keep learning things on this subject. We are both reading things on this subject, and we're all experiencing it. So that's wonderful. And... do you want to say something in the last, 20 seconds here, maybe a sentence for people out there?
Yes, I think that the realm of connecting with plants is not for indigenous people with exotic backgrounds who sleep on the earth. It is our human birthright to be able to connect in a deeper way with our natural world. And I encourage everyone to find ways to do that.
That's great.
Thank you.
That's a good message. Thank you so much, Jolie. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Indeed.
Thank you guys for your awesome program. Thanks for having me, and okay. I'm very grateful.
All right.
Likewise.
Bye.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
So, you are listening to KZYX Philo 90.7 FM, KZYZ Willits and Ukiah 91.5 FM, K201 WHHR Fort Bragg 88.1 FM. And that was Holistic Health Perspectives. And we will be going, I think it's to Mendo Blendo. So thank you. Have a great rest of your day.